It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Now, a new bill signed into law in Indiana on Monday makes it easier for developers to build on many of the state's most protected wetlands. Even though that's happening in Indiana, it could have literal downstream effects in the Mississippi River and the Great Lakes, including those that share a border with Wisconsin. States can roll back wetland protections because of a U.S. Supreme Court ruling last year that took away federal oversight for many wetlands, leaving it up to the states to decide how much they want to regulate them. We're talking about the rollback of wetlands protections in Indiana, the downstream effects it could have in Wisconsin, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about who regulates wetlands, the role that wetlands play in our ecosystems? Do you want to see better protection here in Wisconsin, or do you think there's too much? It limits building and other development. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Melissa Scanlon is professor and director of the Center for Water Policy at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Sciences. Melissa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're going to dig into the details, Melissa, but big picture, why would a change in wetland regulations over in Indiana potentially affect us here in Wisconsin?
Well, it's a great question. And it's because all of these waters are interconnected. And Indiana, what they do in that state will affect part of the Great Lakes, the part of Indiana that flows into the Great Lakes. And then another part of Indiana flows into the Mississippi River Basin. So they are upstream, so to speak, from these major water basins. And what they decide to do has ripple effects on all of us who share these waters.
I want to look at this U.S. Supreme Court case. This is from last year that really changed the landscape when it came to wetlands protections. The case challenged the EPA regulating wetlands, saying, hold on, congressional law only allows you to cover the federal government to protect, you know, rivers, lakes, navigable waterways. How big a change was that when it came to wetland protections?
Well, it's a pretty massive change. And the impact of the decision you're talking about is called Sackett versus EPA, and it was a U.S. Supreme Court decision from last May of 2023. In September, when the Environmental Protection Agency and the Corps of Engineers held a webinar where they were still assessing what they thought was the impact of that decision, they estimated that 63% of wetlands by acres are potentially impacted in terms of losing federal jurisdiction across the country.
Let's dig into the role of wetlands in ecosystems. Why do wetlands matter? Once upon a time, I think we looked at them as a thing to drain for development purposes. What do we lose when we do that?
Yeah, draining the swamp is, you know, common, and thinking about them as just places that grow mosquitoes, right? That's one element of wetlands, and we know that they can be nasty places in that way, but that forgets the fact that wetlands are the Earth's kidneys. They store and filter contaminants. They leave water cleaner for swimming and fishing, the things that we like to do on these larger water bodies. And they also lower the costs for cleaning up drinking water for utilities, because the water that comes out of these wetlands comes out cleaner. They reduce and delay floods by capturing excess water. And, you know, flooding exacerbated by filling of wetlands could cost communities millions of dollars per year in cleanup and disaster relief efforts. So wetlands are these natural buffers that really help us. They're also nurseries for fish, wildlife, and birds. We're over here on Lake Michigan, and so we're particularly focusing on the Great Lakes. There are more than 80 species of Great Lakes fish that rely on wetlands to spawn, feed, and protect their young. So this is also something that is super critical for birds. Whether you are a a birder or not, it's important to have birds in our earth, right? And this is the Great Lakes coastal wetlands in particular are critical habitat for over 340 breeding, resident, and migratory bird species that depend on these ecosystems for their food and raising their young and resting as they're migrating through this area.
Melissa Scanlon is with us, director of the Center for Water Policy at UW-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Sciences, looking at a big change after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling last year when it comes to regulating and protecting wetlands. Federal government removed from those protections in many cases. Now it's up to the states. Changes in some states could affect us here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. Tim is with us on the line in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I definitely feel that was a bad move on the Supreme Court. But as you can see by the Supreme Court that we have, it's all for corporations, and we're losing all of our environment. I mean, it was a Trump concept. Take everything you can, destroy everything in the process of doing it, and then who cares? You know, and what that woman said was true. You know, all that stuff, but we rely on hunting around here. There's a lot of pastimes we use that we need that wetlands for, not to mention just the fact for the natural wildlife. And we have tourism up here, and all this is going to do is put the kibosh on all these little people making money for corporate builders to come in there. And unfortunately, if they have enough money, it seems that they can just buy their way into whatever they want. And remember, the Supreme Court was handpicked, you could say, by the Republican think tank.
Tim, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. Melissa, this Indiana change in law is definitely a builders organizations advocated for changes in protections for wetlands there. How much development pressure has there been in recent history to build on places that are currently wetlands?
Well, you can look at how many wetlands we've lost already to kind of get at that question. In 1971, world leaders signed the Ramsar Convention to protect wetlands globally. And so we've had that convention in place for more than 50 years. And globally, we've lost 35% of the world's wetlands, according to the United Nations. These are deemed the most threatened ecosystem on Earth. And some places have lost even more than 35%. When you read about what happened in Indiana with their new law change rolling back protections for wetlands, Indiana has had lost already 85% of its wetlands in the 50 years since the Ramsar signing. So Indiana is worse off than generally across the globe, and they were rolling back protections even more.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Melissa Scanlon, professor and director of the Center for Water Policy at UW-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Sciences, talking with us about how Indiana's decision to roll back wetlands regulation could affect waterways here in Wisconsin and big changes when it comes to federal regulation. A Supreme Court limits federal regulation of many wetlands nationwide. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you live near wetlands here in Wisconsin? What kind of protections do you think these ecosystems should have? Join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about the far-reaching effects of a new Indiana law rolling back wetlands protections and a U.S. Supreme Court decision that allowed states to cut back on those wetland regulations. Our guest is Melissa Scanlon, professor and director of the Center for Water Policy at the UW-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Sciences. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the federal government should be more involved in protecting ecosystems like wetlands, or do you think these kind of decisions should be left up to the states? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Melissa, we've talked about this Indiana change in laws. What is the current state of wetlands protection here in Wisconsin?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because when the federal government's jurisdiction gets rolled back, as it just does, the focus really does shift to the states and tribes. And states and tribes may move to enhance wetland regulations to fill these gaps, or they might weaken them, like what we've seen this week in Indiana. And so Wisconsin is a great example of strengthening the regulations in the state in the wake of a similar type of decision. Now, back in 2001, the Supreme Court issued a different decision on wetlands. It was known as the Swank decision, and it removed federal jurisdiction over isolated wetlands. And our legislature came together and passed a comprehensive wetlands protection program that went far beyond federal jurisdiction to protect all wetlands within this state, including isolated ones. So we had a similar situation with rolling back jurisdiction and then the state really coming together to fill that gap. In 2017, our legislature took action to roll that back a little bit. They weakened it, put in some exemptions, but we still do have the overall structure intact. The larger point really is that now that it's left up to the states and tribes, it's going to be very fragmented. And you may have states that are moving to fill in these gaps, and you may have others that are rolling things back further. And I like how you phrase this question, and maybe we'll get some calls on it. I mean, do we want to have a uniform policy across the country on this? Because the impacts cross political boundaries, or are we just leaving this up to a fragmented approach that all the states and tribes can figure out how they're handling it?
Let's go back to our callers. Chris is with us in Milwaukee. Chris, hi.
Well, hello. I'm so glad you're taking this subject up, and hallelujah for our directors of water. You're probably too young to know that 28 years or more ago, Perrier Nestle's came into Wisconsin and they bought 20 acres in Adams County, no zoning. They were going to drain the swamp and sell Ice Mountain from the Dells. Well, across the road in Columbia County, my dad had given me 160 acres of wetland 50 years ago, and he said, "Don't you ever drain it or sell it. It's for the future."
Chris, thanks for the call. I'm not sure how young you think I am, Chris. When I first started here at WPR, the Perrier controversy was a hot topic. I booked many talk show segments about it. Melissa, Chris says his dad gave him this land with that charge to preserve it for the future. How hard is it once we lose a wetland or drain it? Is it to bring it back, to restore it, or to something like its original state?
Well, thanks for the call, Chris. It is really so important that people who have private property with wetlands on them take that stewardship approach to protecting them, regardless of what the law says, and go above and beyond to make sure that these gems are protected for us. So we all, and your neighbors, I'm sure, appreciate the service that you're providing. But do we really want to leave it up to voluntary approaches? I think that is the question. Is this so important that you don't want to leave it up to voluntary approaches and trying to do things after the fact to restore something that's already damaged, which is always much more difficult? Or do we want to have regulations in place that prevent damage to these precious ecosystems that really have ripple effects on so many people who are downstream from them?
And to Chris bringing up the Perrier example, how much of a threat to wetlands are things like extraction operations, pulling the water out of nearby groundwater for use, as opposed to, say, a filling in a wetlands for development?
Well, they definitely can be damaged by extracting water, and that was something that different tribes have been concerned about with protecting wetlands for wild rice and off-reservation extraction practices that are lowering groundwater and potentially lowering the water in the wetlands.
We heard from a caller, Gary in Appleton, who says, can downstream states sue the state of Indiana for the pollution? So if changes in Indiana regulations affect, say, the shores of Lake Michigan here in Wisconsin, for example, or affect flooding downstream in the Mississippi River Basin, do you see those affected states potentially taking legal action, Melissa?
Well, states can sue other states. It's very difficult to bring those cases. They're very fact intensive. And I would suggest that we want to have more proactive approaches that really take a more holistic view of the importance of wetlands for the country, and make sure that we aren't leaving it up to a piecemeal kind of after the fact litigation-based approach.
And just briefly, do you see room for a regional approach, kind of like the Great Lakes Compact, but maybe a Midwestern Wetlands Compact where states get together and at least have a regional solution?
Well, that's an interesting concept. I mean, there could be states getting together to have a race to the top, so to speak, in terms of protecting wetlands. That would take some political leadership amongst the Great Lakes states or the Mississippi states to do that.
Melissa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
All right. Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Melissa Scanlon, professor and director of the Center for Water Policy at the UW-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Sciences. She talked to us today about a new law in Indiana rolling back wetlands regulation and how it'll affect water here in Wisconsin, plus a big change in law after U.S. Supreme Court ruling last year that sent wetlands protections back to the states in many cases. This week, local students from the Green Bay area will have the opportunity to play their instruments alongside talented musicians from the community. Joe Schultz has more on the upcoming concert of the Civic Symphony of Green Bay.
Classical music fills the band room at Ashwaubenon High School as the Civic Symphony of Green Bay rehearses for its February concert. The practice features students from Green Bay East High School performing alongside the orchestra. It's composed of community members from all walks of life. It's the Civic Symphony's 29th season. Artistic director Sung Young Graham has been with the group for 19 of those seasons.
We have so many wonderful people. You know, they may not be professional musicians, but they are very devoted and love playing music.
Graham says she tries to make each concert unique. This Friday's performance at St. Norbert College's Walter Theater focuses on educational outreach. The concert will include performances by kids as young as elementary school age playing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. It will also feature more complex pieces performed by students from middle school through college and community members. More than 160 musicians will come together for the performance. In addition to the concert Friday night, the orchestra will play two smaller performances in front of local school children.
I wanted the Civic Symphony to be really integrated in the community. So not just a standing alone group, but actually we can teach our students, our children, to see where it's going.
One of the Green Bay East students performing is Lydia Hanold, a sophomore violinist. At the rehearsal, she practices a violin section solo from the song Romanian Folk Dances. She says it's a little nerve-wracking to be one of the youngest performers with the orchestra.
It feels really scary because I'm not used to performing with, like, older people. I've been in groups before, but it was always, like, very age-ranged. But it's also pretty cool because it's, like, different experiences, different people.
At the recent rehearsal, Graham reassures Hanold that she's doing great.
I know this is the first time, like, oh my God, I'm playing in front of all these people, and you are playing beautifully. You have a beautiful tone. So
don't worry about that. Just play out.
Green Bay East Orchestra Director Joseph Baltus is thrilled to see his students perform with the Civic Symphony.
A performance like this, to rehearse with skilled musicians in the community, it's an awesome opportunity for these kids.
St. Norbert College cellist Simon Whiteley is especially passionate about sharing his love of classical music with future generations. He plans to be a music educator after college. He says a lot of the music we hear today, and a lot of the music that the kids in the audience will hear this week, has roots that date back hundreds of years.
This is something that doesn't stop evolving and that can tell a lot. It also, to me, I think, is the easiest way to kind of cross cultural boundaries.
In fact, Whiteley is so passionate about the genre that he listens to it outside of school and rehearsal.
I get made fun of from close family members as well as friends. I have this playlist on Spotify that's about 48 hours straight of just classical music.
He's not the only one at the rehearsal with a deep passion for classical music. As he practices for this weekend's performance, he plays shoulder to shoulder with local musicians of all ages. Classical music is becoming more popular with young audiences. That's according to a survey published by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra in December. It found the percentage of people under 25 interested in learning more about orchestral music rose from 6% in 2022 to 17% last year. That's exactly the sort of appreciation the Civic Symphony of Green Bay is hoping to foster. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around, there's more to come on Central Time. And remember, you could follow great reporting from the WPR News team all the time over at WPR.org. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.